Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the AgView Pitch. This is kind of a midweek update on some things, and we've got with us our regular guests, Pete Meyer and Jared Creed. How are you guys today?
Good, Chris. How about yourself?
I'm good. Jared, how are you doing?
Peachy. Just fine. Ready for it to dry out a little bit.
Yeah, another beautiful day in paradise. Before we roll on the topic of the day, what are you hearing from your clients? We went from drought to we went from drought to plenty of water. How are things looking from what you're hearing from your clients?
Oh, it's going to sound bad to say, but the complaining tone is coming around pretty darn quick. Good thing it's May 1.
Yeah.
You know, friend of Pete and I's just kind of latched on to what he talked about yesterday. We had a ton of room to hold all this water that has fell. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, we still probably have a whole bunch more room. And, you know, I think guys are maybe their level of concern is getting a little bit higher as they look at some of these forecasts to come. I don't think anybody's sounding an emergency alarm at this point.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we'll have to get a couple more weeks under our belt of wet before the market probably even thinks about it or whatever. But
well, when it's dry, you get the 2012 analogies. When it's wet, you get the 2019 analogies. It's a little bit early for 2019, in my opinion, and I know Jared shares that opinion as well.
Yeah, and there are those isolated places. I talked to a guy yesterday that said he had 7 inches of rain, and he felt like he was floating. So there are some little isolated pockets that got way excessive, and we definitely are praying for those that got wiped out by tornadoes and stuff. That's bad news.
Yep. So. Yeah. Yep.
But with that said, let's kind of hit the topic of the day. And I had called Jared this morning and thought I'd get both of you guys on here to kind of talk a little bit about the news of today as we record this on May 1st. The SAF and the 40B. Start with you, Pete. Just have you kind of explain what that news release was, what it means to farmers, or what it does not mean, to start with.
Okay. So, you know, we really thought that there was going to be some movement on 45Z. 45Z is the tax credit that will take place or take effect on January 1st of 2025. Instead, we started to hear rumors that it was just going to be around 40B. 40B is a tax credit that started on January 1st of 2023 and expires in December 31st of this year. You know, Janet Yellen was in front of the House Ways and Means Committee yesterday and talked about the announcement that was forthcoming. We knew it was going to come yesterday afternoon at 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Central, was going to be a catalyst for the aviation industry. Instead, it was absolutely nothing. Because what happened is that what they decided to do was that they set the parameters for 40B. And those parameters include an all or nothing approach as far as the farmer is concerned. So any feedstock that the farmer sold that will ultimately end up in sustainable aviation fuel needed to hit three topics. Tillage had to be reduced, or actually no-till, cover crops, and then the focus was on nitrogen. So less nitrogen, you know, a stabilizer probably added to your nitrogen. They seem to be keenly focused on nitrogen. So that's for corn. On soybeans, you had to have two out of three. The two were no-till or modified tilling and cover crops. Well, the fact of the matter now is this reminds me, unfortunately, of the way that the EPA deals with the renewable fuel standard, right? Don't worry about what the rules are. We'll let you know later on. Don't worry about what the volumes are. We'll let you know later on. And, you know, basically this is something that while it gives us some clarity from May 1st until December 31st of this year, we're looking backwards. And the fact of the matter, Chris, is we do not produce ethanol. We do not produce SAF in this country from corn-based ethanol. There's one plant in the country converting ethanol to SAF, and that's LanzaJet in Georgia. And they're using Brazilian sugar. Ethanol comes from Brazilian sugarcane, which doesn't even qualify for this tax credit because it's a non-domestic feedstock. The only sustainable aviation fuel being produced at the moment primarily is in California. They just released their numbers from the Q4 of this year. They produced 7 million gallons of SAF. Not a big deal as compared to tens of millions of gallons of renewable diesel. But those 7 million gallons of SAF produced in California were produced with soybean oil, fats, tallows, UCO. So now the question is, you know, how is it possible that we're going to go back 15 or 16 months and look at what feedstock was used in 23 in California and find out if there's some sort of tax credit associated with it? At the end of the day, Chris, it means no money into the farmer's pocket. And we are no smarter about what's going to happen with the 45Z. The concern, obviously, is in the 40B, they bundled those practices together, right? Three practices in corn, two practices in soybean. What we're hearing is that 45Z is going to be able to unbundle those, or will unbundle those practices, so you won't need all three to qualify. But 40B was all or nothing. You had to do everything by the book, and otherwise, you know, you were not entitled to any sort of tax credit. And you can hear the rumblings now, Chris. Why is the government telling me how to farm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and especially with any kind of a bundle of any sort, because you go from south to north, farming practices and the needs of what we have to do on the farm are so different that not sure the government makes the best decisions on our farms.
Well, Jared brought up a tremendous point this morning, right? Regarding the unbundling, how it won't work without unbundling. Fact of the matter is, Jared has a client in Minnesota whose CI score goes up when he uses cover crops. So you have to unbundle it, right? As you suggest, it's not one size fits all. And the fact that they decided that this was going to be it, one size fits all. I get the focus on nitrogen, right? There's no question that everybody's keenly focused on nitrogen. I get that. So you're going to have to add a stabilizer or something, or, you know, whatever. Efficient use of fertilizer is the term they use. When you dig down into it, it looks like you're going to need a stabilizer on your nitrogen so it doesn't go into the air and doesn't leach downstream. I get that somewhat, but, you know, bundling this stuff together in an all or nothing approach helps no one at this point. And besides the fact, like I said, we're dealing with something that's 16 months old again. Mm-hmm. Nobody can go back and change their practices.
Yeah.
You know, Pete, on the unbundling or the lack thereof, it maybe doesn't completely derail the efforts from the 45Z, but it certainly slows it down. Obviously, on the amount of millions of acres of corn and soybeans that we grow in the U.S., I mean, it's a very minor fraction of how many acres are actually using cover crops today. And obviously, there's a lot larger of a chunk that is no-till. I'm not maybe as worried about the fertilizer piece, because I'm trying to make a safe assumption here, maybe a projection to a certain extent, that I can just envision how some of these sustainable practice programs have operated in the last couple of years, and then looking at 40B and then the possibilities of those practices in 45Z. I'm still hopeful and optimistic that it's going to be some type of reduced or efficient tillage, not flat out no-till, and that cover crops not going to be a requirement, but there's certainly going to be some type of implication around efficient fertilizer practices specific to nitrogen. Is that split application? Is that inhibitors, as Pete refers to, anything and everything that's going to create less runoff? I mean, I was kind of astounded to dig into the weeds a little bit and look at some of the measurements involved in the GREET model of just how far after the production cycle the GREET model is calculating various impacts, such as the lifespan of vehicles that will ultimately use any type of sustainable fuel produced from sustainable practices. The list goes on and on and on. And I guess what I'm getting at is, quite frankly, we might have ended up being more confused about what 45Z is or isn't going to be after yesterday's stuff than having any more clarity. And the hope was that we were going to have a lot more clarity and some fundamental practices that was going to be required for not only an ethanol plant, but a farmer to participate in a 45Z space. And I suppose, you know, probably sounds bad to say going into it, we wanted government intervention. And now I kind of regret ever saying that. Now it almost feels like we're more confused, but I don't think that the farmer has the right mindset to what Pete was brought up earlier. The farmer out with the pitchfork, the government's trying to tell me how to grow my crop. Nobody's trying to tell anybody how to grow any crop right now. There's no rules and regulations that you have to grow your crop in this fashion. And who knows, all of this effort might end up being commoditized long-term. that it's just a natural adaptation of U.S. agriculture to, to fulfill the needs that we have within the SAF space and any other biofuel products.
I think one of the things too to add to Jared's comments there is that, what we've seen, while we did get some clarity looking backwards, what I don't understand is that the ethanol lobby is out there running a victory lap, right? We really need to know where we're going, not where we've been, right? And that's the problem. So my thing is that, and I'm not trying to start a civil war here. I mean, God knows we may have one on our hands here anyway in a few months' time. But the fact of the matter is that where are the lobbyists on this? Why are they all of a sudden taking a victory lap, saying, "Oh, well, we got clarity on that." You didn't get anything. We need clarity on 45Z moving forward. Where are your checkoff dollars going? Where are all this money going to the lobbies and this and that? People ought to be pissed off about this, Chris, because we got to know. Now, Secretary Vilsack has said, and I may be eating my words here in 2 weeks, he has said that the 45Z stuff will come out on or before May 15th. We have 2 weeks here. But I also wonder if this 40B is just like, okay, we gave you that. We'll get to you later on the 45Z. Because we're not changing practice. The fact of the matter is that anybody is planting, and you started this whole conversation about how wet it is, nobody can change their practices at this point. And the crop you're growing now is going to, could be used for the 45Z tax credit. Nobody's, well, you can't go to no-till. You can't put, maybe you could put stabilizer on your nitrogen. I don't know how that works. That's way over my head. You guys know that better than I do. You certainly can't plant cover crops. So what does that mean? Now all of a sudden you're out of the game for a year? Are we going to find out about 45Z and then we're going to talk about the 25 crop instead of the 2024 crop? It's just nonsense. So my point here is that whoever was lobbying Washington to get the rules written and to provide us with a roadmap failed.
Well, and the complexity of all this, I mean, just use the nitrogen example you're using. There's more than just a stabilizer. There's timing, there's rates, there's measurements on the front end, partway through, and the back end from the standpoint of the environmental conditions and everything that dictate how you feed the plant. So, I mean, how complicated this could get could be mind-boggling if you really dug into all of the applications that would be climate smart or whatever. And when I say that term, I want to bring that term up real quick. You hear a lot about it, in this election that's coming up, and Mr. Kennedy that's running now too, and his conversations about big ag and all this stuff. If you listen to the rhetoric there, and it's on all potential administrations where, the climate smart agriculture thing is going to be a big deal, I think, on the consumer side of things. What's your take on that? Is that what this 45Z is trying to accomplish, is to meet all those needs, or is there more stuff coming? Anyone?
I'll let you tackle that one, Pete.
Get him to
Sorry,
turn it on.
Chris.
That's
I
all
put
right.
it on mute. Sorry. Look, the fact of the matter is that there are companies out there, including consumer packaging goods companies that Jared and I work very closely with, that are very, very concerned about sustainability. There is pressure from the outside, from the consumer, to make sure that the goods they buy every day and that they complain about the price of every day are sustainable in some way, shape, or form, right? Jared and I have a group, and we're putting this together, and we do have consumer packaging goods companies that are willing to pay farmers for sustainable practices. So yes, I think it is somewhat driven by the consumers, but you also have companies, whether it be an airline or a pork producer, for instance, that have ESG goals that have to be met, and the only way they can get there is with the farmer's help, with some sort of cooperation with the farmer. And it's the only way they can get there to reduce their carbon footprint. Whether you're in the ethanol business or the pork business, they need to create partnerships with farmers in order to achieve their goals. Is that fair, Jared?
I think it is. And what we've also experienced in the last couple of months going down this path there's a various level of seriousness to these CPG companies. There's very loose claims that our products are sustainably raised, and there's some by the book claims. And that probably needs to be shored up a little bit. And back to what I said before, unfortunately, that's probably going to come with some regulations that they have to meet certain standards within their emissions, you know, somewhat tied to scope 3 emissions, and I think still leaves a lot of these CPGs in some uncertain times as well. What I would add is that there is enough interest from a variety of different CPGs about 45Z that for your listeners, Chris, they are concerned about their competitive advantage to originate grain in the competition of ethanol. And, you know, stealing Pete's thunder here, all this stuff is maybe small baby steps towards domesticating the use of the U.S. corn crop, because we're becoming less and less, we're creating less and less dependency on the rest of the world buying it from us, the raw product. Mm-hmm. So if all of these consumer packaged good companies are put to a certain standard and have to follow that standard, I guess what I'm getting at is maybe that goes hand in hand with what 45Z possibly creates in the ethanol space. But without any type of standardization there, you're going to have some CPG companies that could not care at all. They don't want to put any more money out into the industry that they don't have to. And you're going to have some who want to put that stamp on their product at the grocery store shelf for the consumer to pay more ultimately for something that they probably don't even understand what sustainably raised really even means. Mm-hmm. And then you pair that up with 45Z, it's like all of a sudden we're creating these three different buckets, but everybody's worried about originating corn against each other, and to a certain extent soybeans. And, you know, are we going to go down a path of creating various cash markets based upon an ideology that, Chris, my corn is better than your corn, mm-hmm. so I deserve to get more, even though it's all priced off the same Chicago Mercantile Exchange?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely interesting, the two-tier deal. And yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, bifurcated cash market would be a disaster.
Yeah. So
I think I probably shouldn't do this, Chris, but I'm going to mention this. There's some destinations that we deal with very closely that we could provide 90% of their annual grind at a, you know, quote unquote, guaranteed low enough CI score that it'll be financially beneficial for that destination. Mm-hmm. That it probably opens the door for them to be able to participate in SAF in a big way based upon the assumptions and the regulations that we know today. Imagine that phone call if you're in a county that produces 40 million bushel and an ethanol plant grinds 20. Imagine that phone call that they call you and say, thank you for doing business with us over the years, but you can no longer deliver corn here. Because you are at risk of having too high of a CI score that could possibly impact our ability as a company to participate in SAF. I keep going back to that over and over and over again, that there's this, you're looking at all the shiny objects of the possibilities for the farmer to earn more money. Well, the breadcrumbs that are left over seems very, very dangerous. That's where, to a certain extent, some of the commentary out there, the pitchforks again, yeah, maybe there is a little bit of truth that if some of these changes don't, if the unbundling doesn't happen, it can create a situation that your corn is nothing more than a feed grain. And if there's no impact on your feeder, your hog production, your chicken production, your beef production, if there's no stipulations that they have to follow on their own emission standards and sourcing of their feed grains, then you're certainly going to create two separate cash markets.
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, right? It's not just ethanol, Chris. Like to Jared's point, when you look at hog production, 45% of a hog's carbon footprint is on the feed. So if a hog producer is serious about lowering his or her carbon footprint, they're going to have to bid for that. They're going to be in this bucket as well. So if you don't, to Jared's point, you know, I mean, that would create an even more bifurcated cash market, where if you have normal CI score corn of, let's say, 29 or something like that, you know, they may turn their back on you, whether it's a feed mill or an ethanol plant. Because mm-hmm. the fact of the matter, too, is for them to make a real change in their score, they need a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So the little guy who's just, or a little woman who's just on the side, just following the normal practices. I'm not going to listen to what the government has to say. Yeah. When you show up there, don't be surprised if they start asking you for your CI information.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I'm going to wear a tinfoil hat on one other thing here. And since we all know each other well enough, I guarantee I'm going to get a phone call from Pete afterwards. He says, what are you thinking? Imagine all these different geographies in the U.S. that are net importers versus net exporters.
Yeah.
There's a tremendous amount of quote unquote fringe areas of production in the U.S. that is a net exporter and pretty much 100% export because they have no domestic demand in their backyard. How does that play out that if the transportation to get product from point A to point B is going to go into the scoring of a carbon footprint, how do you grow a crop on a fringe with no demand in your backyard that's going to take a lot of miles to get it from point A to point B, and it becomes worth less and less and less?
Yeah. It's
you're not going to get a call from me.
So that this whole discussion kind of leads to a two-part question I have kind of for you, Jared, is first of all, we all kind of have our practices, right? Some of us are trying to do more conservation type stuff where a lot of people are dabbling into, you know, I saw probably more cover crop this year, traveling around, working with clients this year than I've probably seen ever, maybe. more strip till, maybe a little bit more no till, but I would say more strip till, more reduced tillage and all that kind of stuff. First of all, I want to ask the question, is it in people's, you know, is it advisable to try to get to as much quote unquote conservational, you know, climate smart, whatever the hell you want to call it, production as we can, or do you guys just keep doing what they're doing?
And then I feel that some of those phone calls here recently that it does worry me that we're putting the cart in front of the horse here a little bit, that I want to switch up my fundamental practices on my farm, not necessarily agronomically, but more logistics and timing involving money, maybe building additional bins, that I want to be able to participate in all this. And we're all betting on it come. I think the farmer's getting out ahead of themselves a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, you had shared this number before. What was the total acres of cover crop in the U.S.? And we estimate it's 20, I want to say 25 million acres.
That's correct.
Yeah. So 25 million acres out of, call it 180 million acre pool of corn and soybeans. There's a long ways to go there. Mm-hmm. Long, long ways to go there. And
you get
it's also, too early. It's too early to justify making practice changes right here and now.
Right.
You probably and hopefully have enough time from government rulings to adapt for the 2025 crop. But I'm not going to go out and change my equipment and change my, am I going to go from conventional tillage to going to a strip till machine just because I think this is coming? Probably not.
If corn was $7, you might, but not now.
Yeah. The conversion comes with a learning curve, and the learning curve has a cost, and so does the equipment. That leads me to sort of a final question, and you guys probably got a couple more closing thoughts, but there's a lot of ways out there to go get your CI score. There's a lot of people who have it, think they have it, some that do, some that don't really care yet at this point. What are your guys' two cents on that? Do we pay for it? Do we just go on a computer and do it ourselves and figure it out? Do we even need to do it? Where are your heads at on that?
Okay.
Hey, let me throw in one thing here and let me follow up. I'll give you a pitch for what we got going on here in just a second.
Okay.
When we're trying to partner these farms with CPGs, we're going down a process to determine their sustainable practices in the first place to get paid, which is wildly different than paying somebody to verify a CI score that is worthless today.
So, yeah.
Go ahead.
So I will say on the CI score thing, A, we don't know the rules, right? So You know, and we hear people who are out there trying to sell their wares and saying, oh, I can validate your CI score, you know, and telling us that, oh, a CI score is a CI score is a CI score. To your point, Chris, you can go online and do it yourself, right? Mm-hmm. The second point. There is, when you start to talk about federal tax credits, there is so much liability here, right? So an ethanol plant, let's just say an ethanol plant, you know, anywhere, all of a sudden they represent that their carbon footprint or the carbon intensity score of the ethanol that they produced is X. Guess what? The government's going to come in now. You're going to have treasuries involved. You're going to have the IRS involved. You're going to have the Department of Energy most likely involved. You're going to have the EPA involved. And they're going to have to withstand an audit. So if they falsely represent the CI score of their corn, you know, the liability is enormous. So besides the fact that no ethanol plant that we have talked to has told us that they're going to accept third-party verification, because of the liability, they're going to want to see it themselves. They're going to want to get access to your John Deere Center, Field View, whatever it is. They're going to want that data, because when somebody comes knocking on their door with a badge and says, I'm here from the government, I'm here to help, guess what? They're going to have to show that verification. It's not going to be, well, we contracted with ABC Group and ABC Group said the CI score was 2 on Johnny Jones's 8,000 acres. Oops, sorry, we're going to have to see that data. So, you know, as far as the CI score is concerned, you can kind of get a feel for it yourself. The Department of Energy has a calculator. There are calculators out there as well. But until such time when we hear, and the market hears, I shouldn't just say we hear from either an ethanol company or a feed outfit that they're going to accept a third-party verification from company XYZ, there's no reason, in my opinion, to get your CI score verified and certainly not spend any money on it. Jared?
I agree. I'm going to go back to what I said. There's easier ways of coming up with an estimate of your CI score and get paid in a process versus paying somebody to determine your CI score.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. So
we've looked at the validation process, whether it be for the CPGs or the CI score. And Jared can tell you every time I raise my hand and say, boy, oh boy, that's a lot of liability in case something goes wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had people reach out to us, Chris, as well, to explore them being a independent third party verifier. Not to cast any aspersions towards those people, hey, entrepreneur spirit, something coming down the pipeline that they want to get involved, good for them. I just don't see that being widely adopted by your big five in the ethanol industry and your big soybean crushers to a certain extent as well. It seems like PETA mentioned this before, that in a roundabout way, maybe this is best served at the level of the FSA office. Already going into the FSA to certify acres. Why not go in and certify what your practices are as well?
Mm-hmm.
Farmer might not like that, but if there's government funds involved in this, as Pete has alluded to, from a tax credit, that very well could be the best way to check those boxes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're years away from that. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think that the, you know, in our discussions with the ethanol companies and also with some of the feed ops, they're going to adopt the state motto of Missouri, right? Show me. Show me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, this is all good stuff. I think, like you said, it's just I think the lesson here is stay tuned, because we're going to eventually get smarter, whether it's May 15th or August 15th or who knows when, because it seems like it takes a while to get the information, but I think you guys have laid out some really good stuff. You did throw a plug out there, Jared. I'm okay with plugs. Any additional stuff on what you guys are up to?
Yeah. So to be blatantly honest, Chris, our first and foremost focus was to deal with our existing client base, to continue to explore ways of adding additional revenue to their operations. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those cases is just finding CPGs that are, rewarding producers for their existing processes without having to make any changes. Mm-hmm. There's a long list of outfits that are out there wanting to put money into the producer's pocket, we're actively continuing to go down that path, all while trying to stay in front of what 45Z may or may not mean. We've had a website up for a very short while, Chris. This isn't a gloat for us, but I mean, we've had this up and going for maybe 4 weeks. RegenerativeRootsSolutions.com. Place to go sign up, put your information in, we'll contact you. We'll start building that database so we can start collectively working with the ethanol plant, hopefully, rather than against. There's been probably at this hour, I mean, somewhere, call it 2.5 million acres that people are hungry for more information on this. Might be financially related, but without a doubt, people are interested, want to know more. And we're trying to stay in front of that space again, maybe leveraging some of the contacts that we have in the industry and all the connections from CPGs and ethanol outfits and existing business dealings with them. And not necessarily being a middleman, but first and foremost, again, trying to put more money into our existing clientele's pockets.
Let me add two things to what Jared just said. The first thing is that when people hear that we need access to your John Deere Center, let's say, to get your data out, literally that's a not very cumbersome process. It takes you 10 or 15 minutes. We pull the data out, we put it into our database. This way we have it when the CPG comes to us. The second point comes to us with a program. And most likely when an ethanol plant comes to us with a program as well. The second point, Chris, and you've been on the cutting edge of this for a long time. How many times do we hear, well, John Deere is collecting my data and my data is going into the cloud? Are they selling my data? I'm not getting paid for my data. My data is going to Goldman Sachs or to some hedge fund to try to market. Guess what? You're going to get paid for your data. This is the payday for your data. All the years you collected, 5 years worth of data, 10 years worth of data, whatever, this is the payday for your data. So when you were wondering about why you were collecting all this data and what was the point and who's stealing it and whatever, guess what? We've come to roost here, and you're going to get paid for this data. This is where your data becomes extremely valuable to an ethanol plant or to a CPG.
And you still have the decision in your own hands if you
Correct.
decide to pass that data on.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's all really good stuff. That's why I wanted you guys to touch on that, because I think the path you guys are on and the educational opportunities that you guys can present to a lot of producers, especially as we enter into this new realm of confusion and complexity, it's kind of the two hand to hand. We got to stay in tune to this and we got to pay attention to it. So I'm definitely going to have you guys back as things develop and we get more information on, whether it's 45Z or any of these things that are ways for farmers to enhance profitability. As you guys well know, I mean, these margins are damn tight right now, and we all are going to have to pay attention to not just the marketing and not just the production, but what we can do from a business perspective. So, with that said, guys know how to get a hold of you that are on here, and I'll make sure Mac puts the regenerativeroots.com on the show notes too.
One last piece, Chris. And by the way, it's regenerativeRootsSolutions.com.
Regenerative Roots Solutions. I'll have him look it up. He'll put it in the show.
It's too, it's too, it's too long, but I lost that battle. So go ahead.
Oh, whatever. Come on. I just want to advise all your listeners that we've talked with them enough and been in front of them enough that also be careful with what programs come to your doorstep. A lot of times, here's the cookie, come grab it, but you need to make sure what's on the backside of it. What's being tied up, how long, the environmental assets being tied up. I'm not going to name grain company names, but there's some programs out there that is not conducive for the producer because there's a lot better opportunities out there. And so I think there's a wave of opportunists in this space that are saying, I'm willing to pay pennies on the dollar. Farmer has a habit of holding their hand out. You're going to give me what? Okay, yeah, I'll take that money. And then all of a sudden, their environmental assets are tied up and they've handcuffed themselves from participating in better things financially for their farm.
And to that point, both 45Z and the CPG programs that we're working on are 1-year commitments. And you're not committing to us, you're committing to the CPG. and or you're committing to the government, right? And you can stack a CPG program on top of a government, let's say a long-term no-till program. You get involved with some of these carbon things, you're tied in there for 3 years or so.
Yeah.
And then what happens? So to Jared's point, don't be fooled by the first shiny thing that shows up at your door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just different by region too. You know, it's
absolutely.
Every area is definitely different. So with that said, guys, I really appreciate it. Any final things, anything that I didn't ask or anything you like, we should have talked about that so that we don't hang up and then say, ah, shit, we should have talked about that.
No, I've wasted enough of your time. Chris, maybe Jared has something salient to say. I don't.
I'm good.
All right. Hey, guys, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, again, on the AgView Pitch here. We really appreciate you guys listening. And if you got other topics, things you would like us to be hitting on or got questions for these guys, reach out and let us know, and we'll be in touch. With that said, thanks, everybody. Catch you next time on the AgView Pitch.